So we're probably getting a little more into like the spoilerish realm now,
yeah.
as this whole thing progresses.
BCW,
so.
Guys, there's going to be spoilers.
So, warning.
From this point on,
I want to talk about Mari a little
bit. Go ahead.
Mari Illustrious Makinami.
You know, when I first saw her name on a picture, like a fan art, I thought it just said Mari Illustrations, and I was like, oh, there could be some book of Mari Illustrations. I didn't realize her name was Illustrious, and that was her fucking name. Anyway.
I want to know if her name is actually supposed to be Mary, but...
Mm-hmm. Like Mary Sue?
Do they actually say her name in the movie?
I don't remember.
I don't think they do outright,
but...
it's kind of hard to tell because... Where I'm gonna go in with like the structure thing is that like her role in the film is really compartmentalized.
Yes.
Like you could literally you could cut her out like very easily from like the first full half of the film and she could just show up. Like the first scene, she's in there, you know, she pilots her Ava and she fights an angel and then they both blow up. Spoiler. Mm-hmm. But, like, there's no interaction with, like, any other characters, and Kaji never mentions her. And then she just parachutes randomly onto the top of Shinji's school, says a bunch of stuff in English, and then smells him, and then wanders off. Like, that scene, and then she tells him not to say anything, so he obviously doesn't say anything to anybody else about her. So, like, there's another scene where it's completely compartmentalized, just completely interjected, and this is actually, like, that is the smart way of doing it. Without totally creating like a tangent of how things would go, you know, like Back to the Future, you know, like alternate 1985 where Hill Valley is on fire, and then like it's not until like the very end does she actually like have any effect whatsoever on the plot of the movie. But that said, what I'm talking about it not having good structure is because. Those two scenes that she's in previously that establish her don't really establish her at all because it doesn't characterize her. She's just this kind of like goofy girl that likes having a suit that fits her boobs.
Yeah, that's basically...
That's literally what she is in a nutshell. She's this kind of weird British girl.
That's the conclusion most people came from. Let me just tell you, her fob accent is fucking hot, and I think it's just...
I think it's funny that her English is actually pretty spot
on.
Well,
Maya Sakamoto is actually she sings in English, and her singing voice in English is it's native level, so she is definitely very good at English. So like,
yeah, so like I'm impressed that like she was able to speak English in like an English British whatever accent pretty well. Whereas Kaji just blathered on and just total nonsense.
Yes. Actually, Mari, let's. I do agree with what you're saying about that, and I think that's just because hopefully she'll have something to do later on in the movie. We'll probably talk later on in the series, so we'll probably talk about that later on in the show. But you definitely make a good point about that.
Okay, well, I was just going to say, like, I thought the reason she was done like that was because it was sort of like a joke on Mary Sue's in fan fiction. Like, it was just sort of like a jab from Anno.
Well, actually, one thing I like, before these movies came out, there was like all sorts of like, oh yeah, Karu and Mari, they're gonna come to these movies early, and they're like gonna, and we just assumed they were gonna interact with the cast. Like, that's what we were talking about for like 50 minutes in the last fucking podcast we did.
Yeah, and that didn't happen at all.
And then like, you know, you have like Ava Unit 5, like people are expecting it to do shit, then it just explodes in the first 5 minutes of the movie. Like, there's lots of teasing like that in this movie, I think, which, again, we'll touch upon later
on. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But anyway,
that's what I was kind of saying about like it having like kind of lousy structure. Like if you kind of digest it, it's like there's like two throwaway Ava battles like within the first 10 minutes.
Yeah,
you think the bomb
like
think
literally
the bomb Ava is throwaway?
No. In the first 10 minutes, the two new angels.
Oh yeah. Okay.
And then the introduction of like okay, so we got a quick battle with a throwaway angel to establish Mari, and then we have a 5 minute battle to. Five minute battle with a throwaway angel to establish, you know, Asuka. So
really?
It's like these two quick kind of like scenes that are basically the same exact thing, but with different AV units, different characters, and different angels. But they're literally like the same
Aaron,
thing.
Aaron, hold on. Asuka's scene has a Gainax kick. Mari's does not.
No, it doesn't have a Gainax kit. It has a Kamen Rider kit.
Okay, it has an Inazuma kick, right? That's what it is?
Which has been in, like, a whole bunch of stuff. It's been in Ava. It's been in Diebuster, Gunbuster.
It's almost a Gainax trademark at this point. Like, they've been doing it since the dawn of motherfucking time. Yeah. It's like one of their nerd jokes, basically. So what else structurally did you see wrong with the movie? Like, I didn't notice that much except for that detail with Mari you were talking about.
I'm trying to think. I'll have to think about that a little bit. I think, like, the most of the structural problems are relegated to, like, the beginning of the film, and then Mari's use, and also how, like, Asuka gets taken out of the game, like, really, really early.
Okay.
Because, like, if you think about it, the second film spans the events and also some of the ideas and concepts of episodes 7
through 19.
Through not even 19, like 23.
That's true.
If you think about it. Because what happens to Asuka by the end of the film is pretty much, or at least similar, to where she ends up at the end of
that's
the show.
True.
In episode like 23, 24.
I didn't think about it that way. That's a good observation, Aaron.
But, I mean, like, especially like the one of the neat things about Ava is it has a lot of visual parallelism in it. And there's a cut of animation where she's locked down, you know, after being, like, contacted by the angel in the contact experiment that is pretty much the same exact orientation as that cut from the end of Evangelion where she acknowledges her mother's presence in the Ava and, like, yells out, "I don't want to die," and it shows, like, her corpse with maggots all over it. It's, like, literally the same exact orientation and composition.
That's true. That's a good point. Anyway, I think from this point we'd launch some more story stuff, but before that, I kind of want to talk about music. Because definitely, one thing that has been a big thing in these movies is how they've re-recorded the music. But I think what's the most interesting use of music in these movies are these use of sort of not traditional, but well-known Japanese songs at certain key points, like when...
Basically, the fight between the corrupted Asuka...
Yeah, and Shinji.
We're at the spoiler alert territory now.
Yeah, the song that plays during that scene is a song they play at graduation at Japanese schools.
I hate that song. Like, if I could get rid of one piece of music in this film, it would be that. And I totally understand where they were going with it because it has this kind of like kind of marionette kind of feel to it, you know, like this kind of like mechanical, like with the harpsichord and the kind of mechanical like player piano marionette kind of thing going on. Like, I understand where they were going in war, but I absolutely hate it, and I think it just totally ruins the scene.
Okay, I know some people who feel like that, but they don't like it because they feel it's heavy-handed, and I know it's heavy-handed, and I like it because it's heavy-handed.
That's the same reason I like it too, because it's completely heavy-handed and completely like, you know, in your face and like, you know, they're just like they're smashing your face up against it, but like, you know,
I think it's poignant, and also in the finale of the film they use Tsubasa o Kudasai, which is like this famous Japanese rock song that it's covered by the K-On! Girls and K-On!, and it's basically this famous Japanese song about asking for like wings to fly into the, like, you know, the pure blue sky, and again it's really heavy handed, but I definitely felt it, like, it drove that final scene up to, like, 5,000%. Like, it just, I was crying in the theater watching that. Like, not like, I wasn't, like, crying, like, because it was emotionally moving. I was crying because it was awesome. Like, that's why I was, like, I just loved how it was used. I'm like, I appreciate that, you know, it's over the top, but I like over the top stuff. So, it's, you know, whatever. I mean, I definitely think that use of music is really, and definitely a lot of the normal background music is, of course, very well composed, like, you know, these, like, sort of luscious, quiet string pieces playing as, you know, these characters are exchanging dialogue in the elevator, or, like, the cheesy music that plays when they're, like, all doing the slice of life stuff, you know, all that stuff's great, so I just feel it's worth mentioning.
That second piece of music, I really hated it similarly the first time I heard it, but, like, after I watched it again, I actually kind of thought it was a bit more fitting. It actually reminded me of Calm Susser Todd from the instrumentality sequence in End of Evangelion, but not quite as, like, iconic and beautiful, but it might grow on me a little bit.
They were going for the same sort of thing. Like, it's not quite End of... Because End of Eva is the most perfect movie ever made, as you well know, so...
I think it's brilliant.
It's definitely not that level, but I think it's definitely does its perfect way to, I think, end the movie. And I think it underscores that scene very well. And I think if you're a Japanese viewer, like, it may have more cultural significance to you because that's, like, a really famous song. So,
or it could be really, really cheesy, like the sex scene in Watchmen with Hallelujah.
Yeah.
Well, see, the thing is,
oh, man, how I hated how they fucked up that movie.
Japanese don't really care about cheesy. Just think they're really as cynical as Americans are just yet.
Give them time.
Despite not agreeing with the usage of those two pieces of music, I gotta give, like, big thumbs up for the music in the second film on a whole, because I really was underwhelmed by the music in the first film, with the exception of Beautiful World and Angel of Doom, which was absolutely epic. But aside from those two pieces of music, there was no new music at all in the whole movie. Mm-hmm. It was all just updates on the originals. And not even, like, terribly creative updates. It was just, like, updating for the sake of updating
it. Exactly. That's basically how that whole movie felt, I think.
But the second film, it's, like, half the music in the film is new. Some of the new pieces, like, that one piece that starts playing, like, right after, like, Kairos on the Moon, he says, like, now is the time. And, like, Zeruel starts attacking, and everything just starts, like, accelerating. Yeah. Like, that's a great piece of music. I love that sequence.
I really loved, like, the 1960s jazz music they played during the Slice of Life stuff that's apparently titled Mellow 2006 on the soundtrack.
Mellow 2006.
Wait, let's not forget the best piece of music that...
Yeah, I love that. When Misato has her face pressed against the glass.
Yes, that's like the best piece of music.
I love that.
It's like 5 seconds
long. It's like this great, like, sitcom-y, like, interlude. See, I love the sitcom parts of Eva, too. I like how they meshed, like, going off a bit of a tangent, I just love how they meshed all these, like, great elements of Eva together into something that kind of made... Actually, it's something that made pretty good sense, as we established earlier on. But stop talking about music for a while, unless you have anything else to say about it. I mean, I have nothing left to say.
No, but I'll comment on that sitcom thing you mentioned.
Okay, go ahead.
There's like a 30-second scene of Ray just staring at a knife that randomly cuts away to, like, another musical montage of the city that's really silly.
There are definitely changes from the original TV series. There's definitely similarities. And I think before we get deep, super deep down, I kind of like how, at least I noticed this, maybe you guys didn't feel this, but I felt there was a good sense of underlying tension across the entire movie. Like, in between slice of life scenes, there'd be cuts to, like, Gendo and Fuyutsuki on the moon, talking about serious story stuff. And there was definitely, like, hints that something was brewing amongst all this, like, sitcom, Asuka naked coming out of the shower with the straw over her boobs, a la Shinji when he first moved in, blah, 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 blah. And I definitely think they did a good job of showing there was, like, some conspiracy happening.
Even how they, like, characterize, like, simple things like his tape player. You know, like, that, like, it always just keeps flipping back and forth between 25 and 26. But, like, that tape player, like, if you pay attention to that, like, particularly, like, if you go through and watch it a second time and pay more attention to what's going on with that tape player, like, even that damn tape player has a narrative to it.
Actually, that wasn't in the series, like... I mean, it was in the series, of course, but, like, in the movie, it was something he got from his father, and that wasn't in the series, right? They don't say he got it from his father in the show, right?
No, right, but it was a really clever way of making that anachronism make sense and work, because 15 years ago, a tape player would not have been that weird, even though CDs were pretty commonplace back in, like, 95. But, like, even today, if you see somebody walking around with, like, a CD player, CDs, like, they're not, like, I mean, they're getting to be kind of old technology now, but you see somebody walking around with a CD player, it's, like, the weirdest thing ever. And, like, I think some you know, teenager in 2015 walking around with a tape player, even if it's a digital tape player, that's just weird.
Yeah. Also, the tape player goes from 26 to 27 at the end. Oh, my God. What's happening? The whole thing's changed. Am I just crazy in thinking that there's, like, underlying tension throughout this movie, or is
I agree with you, and I kind of feel it's because Anno sort of matured as a director, and writing style has matured as well. The one thing I will say about Ava, the reason why I really like Ava, it's all because of the characters and the writing. Like, screw all the other crazy ass shit with the angels and everything. It's always about the characters, for me anyway. And like, I just felt like he sort of got on his game. Anno got on his game with this movie because he's hitting all these themes now, and that wasn't very clear in the television series.
I think the way the plot, let me note, I haven't seen the TV series in 5 years, but I definitely think that the way the story comes into the TV series, it works for a TV series, but it just kind of comes in, but it's not sort of weaved in very well. But I definitely think that in this movie, since it's a movie, they weave it into the main thing very well.
Yeah, I feel like there's a sense of purpose now, even with the title, You Cannot Advance. Yes. You can see Shinji and Gendo, they seem to be getting kind of closer in this film, and Rei tries to bring him over that little hump by making him this dinner, and yet the title of the movie is You Cannot Advance. That relationship doesn't happen because shit goes hits the fan with Asuka getting corrupted and everything. And I thought that was really neat.
I also think that it's kind of there's a lot of the pacing, there's more emphasis on them not being able to repair the Avas in time.
Exactly. I think that's another...
All four characters, come into danger of, they mentioned the, contamination zone in the TV series, but they never actually, explain, what it is. And in, the movie, in these new movies, particularly the second film, they, I think all four characters, run the risk of going into the contamination zone, and they describe it as, if they go into the contamination zone, they will cease to be human.
I think there's lots of things in the Ava TV series that may have brushed over due to, changes during production.
Absolutely.
And they definitely take some of those things, but I can't cite off the top of my head right now, but they definitely take some of those things and add more meat to them. They're not just, jargon thrown around. Because honestly, watching the Ava TV series, I don't pay attention to the plot that much. I don't. it's not a bad plot, but, it's all about how the characters get more and more fucked up. That's why you watch Ava TV. Ava movie is more this plot-driven thing, and I think that's kind of what they were trying to do in the original mission statement when they said they were trying to make Ava that's more easy for everyone to understand. Because I think it's easier for people to understand a plot-driven piece than something that involves you, trying to figure out imperfect things like characters,
I think that's still... they're still imperfect, but there's a sense of purpose to what they're doing now with everything, and what's her name? Misato, for instance. In a TV series, I always felt that she was kind of cold and manipulative. Here, she's still a little manipulative, but she seems more tender and more sensitive to Shinji's feelings.
Yeah. Conversely, she's also a little bit more messed up, I think.
Yeah.
like there's this weird scene in the first film where she goes she's gonna slap Shinji and then he walks away and then she slaps herself in the face.
Yeah. Right.
It's kind of masochistic.
It's very Japanese. I don't mean that in a joking racist way either.
If somebody did that, if I saw someone do that, I'd be okay, I'm gonna walk away now, crazy lady.
I think that scene sort of perfectly illustrated how she's getting frustrated with herself.
Actually, that was one of the few parts I liked about 1.11, because I felt the adults didn't get off very well in that movie at all. Because my favorite characters in Ava are the adult characters, so their usage is kind of squashed. But actually, one thing to note about this movie is, since it is a movie, character, screen time definitely has to be chopped down a bit, so lots of side characters, Hikari, Toji, Kensuke, they're all kind of pushed to the back burner. A lot of the adult characters, they still have a fair amount of characterization, but the movie is squarely, I think, focuses around Shinji, Rei, and just Shinji and Rei, yeah. I think it's really their movie. And Asuka's do a bit, but then she dies. But would you say that is, a fair...
Is she dead? Is she dead, or did they just, put her into,
I think she was sent to the next dimension. I think that's how that works.
I see their parachutes, they're okay, but I could have sworn, like, there was a scene where they show, like, Pod, and, like, she's okay.
Yeah, she survived, kind of, maybe. Yeah,
but she's all fucked up.
I'm surprised how much they managed to fit in, although I'm a little disappointed. I mean, like, they cut out the entire fourth child arc, and, like, you know, Hikari and Toji never kind of get to grow close, although... But there's one really terrific, like, little cut of, or two cuts of animation where, like, Toji is holding her and, like, kind of protecting her when, like, shit's going down that I really, really like.
I think that's something that'll be brought to light, like, in the further movies. Like, it'll be something they say, like, oh, by the way, these two are together, blah, blah, blah. They won't really focus on it too much, but they'll probably mention it, I think.
I kind of hope they do.
Because, I mean, it's, as the Japanese love to say, it can't be helped. And so I think stuff like that simply cannot be helped. I think as a result of things getting cut down, I think the characters, would you say they're a bit less detailed? Like, that's one thing people were complaining about, like, the characters are a bit more simple and straightforward, and some people like that, some people don't. I don't care either way. I like how they're doing it here, but Asuka Shikinami is, in fact, a very different character from Asuka Langley Soryu.
Part of this is because... they haven't gotten to the point where they fleshed out her character in the new movie series because, like, they touch upon the fact that she's a college graduate and she's now a captain, which, you know, intuitively makes a lot more sense because, you know, if she was kind of brought up in this environment and graduated from college, naturally, you know, she would, go into the military like Masato went into the military. But in the TV series, she's bitchy, but... it's also very apparent that she's flawed. Like, when... well, I guess, like, one of the merits that Magma Diver
best
has
episode.
Is that at the very end of that episode, she and Masato are sitting on the hillside looking at the sunset, and, you know, there's this very kind of quiet scene where Asuka asks Masato if she knows about her past, and, you know, and it's like, it's all, you know, ancient history or whatever, and, like, they actually start to, you know, touch upon... like, her backstory. They don't, like, actually finally get to it until, like, episode 22. But there's, like, these little indicators throughout the series that she might just be the most scarred among them. Whereas in the movie, there's, like nothing at all. There's no, I need to be the best. In the TV series, like, you know, she's always saying stuff about why she pilots Ava, you know, why she has to be the best, you know. Like, that's completely absent in the second movie. It's more like she's just, you know, straight up bitchy, you know, like, prima donna kind of character.
She comes off to me as a socially awkward teenager, because she mentions how much she likes being alone and how she just doesn't get along with people.
But she does have these, like, tender moments, like Rei... like, sends her, a voice message where she says, thank you, and then Asuka smiles, you know? Like, the TV series Asuka, like, you know, she always had, like, she occasionally had, like, a smug grin, but she never had, like, a small, you know, like a soft smile, like she would in this new movie. So she's kind of like, what is that term, tsundere?
Tsundere.
Can you explain
tsundere,
that in what...
Tsundere. Is a Japanese word that is made out of two words, sun, which means like cold and pointy, and dere, which means like more warm and comforting. So basically, for those who don't know, but my whole audience probably knows, sun dere is when a girl starts off being sun, cold to the protagonist, but then she slowly becomes dere, meaning she becomes warm and starts liking him. Of course, these days, to be a tsundere, all you need is the sun part, and the fans can imagine the dere part in their head.
So would you agree that, because I've heard people say this, would you agree that Asuka in the new film is more of a tsundere character than she would be in the TV series?
Well, Asuka was like one of the original tsundere. Like, they didn't have that name back then, but I think, I don't know, maybe in a way...
like, self-aware, you know? Like,
I see. They're aware of the fact that she's a tsundere. Is that your meaning?
So they emphasize some of those aspects of her character now?
But see, the thing is, she's not, like... I guess she does like Shinji, but, like, I don't know. I think in this movie comes across she just has trouble with, like, dealing with everybody. Like, there's definitely Sundere. She's definitely very Sundere, but, like, I don't think there's much of a difference between, like, as far as how Sundere she is. Because, I mean, as far as Sundere goes, like, there are far more severe Sundere out there these days. So.
Kugiyama Rie.
Rie, yeah. That's what makes
all her characters,
my...
basically, except for Alphonse and the...
Fullmetal Alchemist.
They're anyway, all Sundere.
Basically, more or less, but some angry Rie Kugimiya fan is going to come and say, no, if you watch Saki, she was the taco girl, and that girl was not a tsundere. Wikipedia, Wikipedia, Wikipedia. But
we're okay, digressing here.
We are digressing. So, yeah, I think one thing about the characters in this movie, they're painted in broad strokes. And I think that is a function of it being a movie, and I think it's good. Like, I definitely think it makes things, like, it's not too many... I think if they kept the characters, because the characters had this really slow sort of nuance, sort of one step forward, two steps back development in the series. Would you say that's accurate? Like, as far as I remember?
One step forward, two steps back?
Maybe, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like any character growth that they have is, like, immediately squashed. Like, as soon as Shinji, like, develops a backbone in the TV series,
yeah,
he gets, like, sucked into an angel and almost dies and then comes out and he's just, like, depressed as shit.
Yeah. So I think in this movie, like, if you put all that stuff into a movie, it would definitely feel kind of rushed and come back. So I definitely think them painting these characters with these really broad strokes definitely helps. And as we mentioned... or may not have mentioned, but Rei, there's some changes with her, too. She's a bit less of a, you know, oh, I'm Rei. I speak in the same tone of voice all the time. You know, she kind of, like, you know, blossoms a bit, you know.
Yeah, she's less of, like, a, I guess, a waif.
Yes, basically.
So, she, like, yeah, she does become, like, a bit more, like, soft and tender and, like, how many times does she actually, like, genuinely smile in the TV series aside from, like, the end of episode 6 where they defeat the Crystal Angel?
Not that... I think that's the only time she actually smiles.
Yeah, but
honest.
But in this new movie, she, like, has these, like, cute smiles every so often, you know? Like, there's, like, two or three times when, like, she just kind of randomly, cutely smiles like she's in love with Shinji. And, like, the whole cooking thing and the party that she tries to put together.
Yeah.
You know, that's, like, stuff that the original Rei could just, like, not wrap her head around.
Yeah, and I think we should keep in mind at this point, we don't know if she is, like, the second... Because in the first TV series, like, that Rei that we see at first is the second Rei, right? Because the first one was strangled by, like, Ritsuko's mom. Mm-hmm.
That's irrelevant because there's, like, some... There's some amount of them being able to back up or transfer her memories because... Like, when the second Rei dies, and the third Rei is just kind of, like, dropped off at, like, Rei 2's old home, she takes the glasses and starts, like, you know, squeezing them real hard and starts crying
in her vagina.
Anyway, she says, like, I've seen, you know, this is the first time I've seen these, but, like, I feel like it's not the first time.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So, like, it's vague, and she doesn't hardly ever talk, so it's not apparent to other characters that she doesn't have, like, you know, lights are on, but nobody's home. But there is some amount of, you know, shared history.
I see.
Even if it's just very, very vague between...
Like feelings, you know, and stuff.
Between the three Reis. So I think it's kind of irrelevant.
Shinji is definitely more badass. Like, you know, he definitely comes through at the end and, like, you know, has his skin torn off and, like, you know, rescues Rei and they, like, dance in the sky and stuff like that. And
he's a lot more likable, I think.
Certainly. Do you think he's similar to manga Shinji in a way? You think so?
I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, he's definitely less mopey. Like, you know, his interactions with Kaji especially are very, like, you know, they're not like, oh, I'm so sad. They're like, oh, I'm a little sad, but I'll talk to you about it while we're watering these watermelons, you know?
Not many people will agree with me, but I kind of liked Sadamoto's take on the three children in the manga. Like, people... some of the Ava fans out there have gone to the point of referring to Sadamoto's manga as fan fiction, which I think is a little bit unfair. Like, I still like the series characters, but I kind of like the sort of derivation that Sadamoto took, which I think is actually kind of similar to the new Rebuild films.
Well, let me just say something about Sadamoto. I read this on some Ava emails that may have been archived at avamonkey.com. I'm not sure where they were. But it was like these bits of info about Sadamoto, how he actually came up with the name Evangelion.
He pitched it,
and like it was rejected a couple times, and they finally accepted it. And he also came up with the plot point that Shinji's mom was in the Ava. So it's not like he has nothing to do with the series beyond designs. He is like intimately involved in the way the story went. So I think it's cutting Sadamoto short to say his manga is like fan fiction. I mean, it's a really good alternate take, I think.
The initial title for Evangelion was Alcyon, or Alcyon, or something like that. A-L-C-I-O-N. And Sadamoto really didn't get a whole lot of, or, you know, amongst Western fans, has not gotten quite as much sort of credit for his creative involvement in the show. Like, I guess the best way of describing it is, it was initially, like, Anno's idea, and then kind of Sadamoto grafted on a lot of little things and like a lot of kind of creative direction, like a lot of like the characters, the maternal. Yeah, he kind of like fine tuned it to what it is now, like with like the maternal Ava kind of thing, as well as I think some of the Judeo-Christian stuff, because like in the original, like some of the plots are just really, really weird. Like there's in the original one, like the new type 100% collection, they have the original story outline, and like after like I think like 13, 14 episodes, like it just gets like dramatically different. Like they're going to like these like weird, crazy like underground bases, like these like ancient civilizations, and there's like one point where like 12 angels descend from the moon, and you know, shit like that, like 12 whole angels descending from the moon. And I'm like, this is like crazy stuff.
Well,
you know?
as far as story stuff, do you think maybe they'll work, this is just pure speculation, but do you think maybe they'll work some of that into these new movies? Like,
I mean, I think that they already kind of have.
Yeah.
Like, the manga, because like the Ava anime and the Ava manga are not like, it's not like the manga is based off the anime or vice versa. They're separate but equal creations, where it's like, they're both like, the anime is, you know, Anno's version of that original concept in animation, and then the manga is Sadamoto's take on that original concept in manga. However, because of just, like, the pace of production, you know,
Sadamoto, like, just, like, sitting down in his, like, room, like, looking at cars as opposed to drawing manga, because he's, like, rolling in Ava Gold, so he doesn't feel like he has to work, so the manga has been running for 12 years.
Just that he has less of a reason to adhere to the original story concept, because the anime has been done for years. Like, even though Sadamoto is still making Ava manga. He started that back in, like, 1994.
So in some ways, the Evangelion manga is the original. No, I'm just...
But, like, getting back to what you said, like, the second film, it kind of shares a lot in common with the manga in terms of, like, how it's structured and paced, because the manga cuts out a lot of that really kind of...
Action arc stuff.
Pointless action arc stuff.
I don't think it's pointless, Aaron.
Like, there's, like, a scene in, like, the manga where they go to an aquarium, and guess where they go in the second movie?
Oh, the aquarium! Ah.
They go to an aquarium, and... There's a similar thing with like Rey like kind of burns herself like making tea, and then like in the new movie she like cuts herself making food. That's kind of similar, and you know, just kind of cut out certain things in the manga and how he like took some of the elements from like the episodes that were actually not important but had little important ideas in them. Like he worked those into later events. They did the same thing with the second movie. Like in the TV series, the episode where they're down in the tunnels and it's a blackout and they have no power and they have the Avas running on these extra batteries.
My favorite episode also.
The whole point of that episode is that's their first sortie together and they all have to work together as a team. Those events aren't in the second movie at all, but they put that emphasis of it being their first sortie together and that they all have to work together as a team into the next episode's events with the Falling Angel. So they kind of rearrange a lot of things in kind of similar ways. So when I watched the second movie, it reminded me a lot of the fifth volume of the Ava manga.
So let's, like, move on to story changes. I mean, this is going to probably be the last stretch of this podcast, which is probably going to be, like, 2 fucking hours. I didn't anticipate it to be this long, but I guess there's actually a lot to talk about in this movie. First of all, like, they've rewritten lots of things that we've been talking about and hinting at. You know, we've talked about character deaths, all this stuff. As you said, Mahdi and Kaoru don't actually do much in this movie, which was kind of a tease. And I actually think one thing about the story changes in this movie and how a lot of it is based off of, there's like fan service in the sense that you watch the TV series, and then there's these certain scenes from the TV series where they end differently. Like the elevator scene. Like,
yeah.
Like, Asuka's about to slap Rei, but no! In the movie, she catches her arm. Or, like, you know, there's lots of stuff that's, like, based off expectations, and then they, like, throw you a new one. I mean, do you think the last fight is kind of like that? I mean, they definitely changed that up a bit. You know, almost for the better, I should say. I mean, it definitely works as a great conclusion to that movie. I really got into the imagery they use there and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, this is like, major spoiler time, but, like, the fact that they kind of introduced, like, Third Impact in the, like, equivalent of episode 19 is, like, you could sum up that whole movie with, like, the question, already?
Yeah.
Although that doesn't really hold true when you consider the fact of what happens after the previews.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Like, if you watch the second film, make sure you watch the credits to the second ending and then the preview.
Of course, all Japanese people sit through credits. Like, I was in the movie theater, and, like, no one got up during the credits, because they were just sitting there watching them. But, alright, so some things we mentioned, Asa gets knocked out early, that definitely affects things, and Mahdi, actually, Mahdi's big involvement, with Zabisto.
Zabisto.
Boner Town just linked me the very poorly drawn picture of Kaji's face.
Yeah, use that for your, podcast image.
Actually, I think I
would. No. I got a better one for you. You should use the cut of animation where Asuka is raising one of her eyebrows when she first gets introduced. It's really funny looking.
Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Looks like an emoticon.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what did we want to say about, you know, I mean, I guess it's obviously different that Mahdi comes in and fights, and she introduces this whole new thing called Zabisto, and I'm not sure what bearing that'll have on the rest of the movies, but, you know, there's definitely these interesting story changes. But the thing is, what this movie is, it skirts similarity and differences, and, like, it's sort of, it's this very fine line, I think, and I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but, like,
So basically what you're trying to say is, like, they're making just barely enough changes, but on the whole it seems pretty similar.
Yeah, but but the thing is, there's, like, people complaining, oh, it's not similar enough to the TV series. Like, why do you want something similar to the TV series? Shouldn't you want something different? Like, you watched that TV series before. Do you want to watch it again? Like,
yeah.
Just watch the TV show again.
I honestly do not get that complaint. Like, I mean, this is supposed to be, like, almost like a reboot of the franchise, and, like, it's got to go in a different sort of direction. And I mean, like, if you're touching the same themes over and over, what's the point of making, like, these films other than to have, like, a high-definition Evangelion? I mean, that's kind of pointless in the long run if you enjoy the TV series for.
Yeah. So. I think a lot of the main changes, like, or, like, details, like, in terminology, like, Gendo called Adam the key of something that I can't pronounce. I'm sure Aaron. I couldn't even hear it through his Japanese accent, so, like, I couldn't.
Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And,
but it's a little bit vague because, I mean, if you consider that up on the moon, there's a being that's wearing the mask of Lilith, and then down in Terminal Dogma, there's a being that's wearing the mask of the angels that's identified as Lilith. And there's this kind of, like, definite parallelism going on there, but it's, like, reversed, because the being that's down in Terminal Dogma is white and is wearing the angel mask, and, like, I don't know, it's kind of weird because, like, and then the beast, and then the being up on the moon is, like, dark. So it almost seems to me like, you know, like, it was the white egg of Adam and the black egg of Lilith. Like, I almost want to say that, like, the white being that's down in Eternal Dogma is actually
Adam.
Okay. And then the being that's up on the moon is actually Lilith.
Right. All right. That's...
But it's really vague because Adam hasn't really... I don't even think Adam has been mentioned at this point.
They mentioned Adam when Kaji brought it. And they said this is...
No, it's the...
They called him Adam, right?
No, it's the... They call it the Key of Nebuchadnezzar.
And they all calls it the Lost Number, whatever that means. Like, what's that supposed to... And there's also these other small details, like the Vatican Treaty, which, you know, which kind of adds a bit more of the political aspect to Ava, like, you know, how this is a worldwide effort and we're just focusing on one part of it. I think that's a kind of another thing the movie highlighted well. And actually, there's lots of world things, like, not just in the animation, but story-wise, like, you know, they go to the aquarium and you see, like, all this life, you know, that was thought dead after the third impact, where they brought it all here. There's lots of... all these small touches, not just visually, but and the narrative that sort of make the world a bit more of a cohesive, living, breathing thing.
Okay, I found it. I'm going to read this back to you.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no mention of Adam, so.
And this is from the subs.
Okay.
Which may not be entirely accurate because, you know, they're fan subs.
Yeah, those subs are good. I know they're good.
Here is the promised item. Okay. The last number that was being kept as a spare. The guidepost that will link the spirit with the divine. Right. This will open the gates of human instrumentality. The Key of Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay, so I think in my mind, I just thought it was Adam because I saw the TV series. I just assumed. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I started referring to the being on the moon as being Adam, which might make sense because, you know, he's up there with, you know, Kaoru, who's supposed to be the vessel of his soul.
They're chilling, and smoking doobies, you know.
And then somebody mentions to me, they haven't mentioned Adam yet at all.
Yeah.
And I'm, like, hard-pressed to find a mention. I just made that kind of intuitive, you know, link in my mind.
Yeah, me too. So, weird. Yeah. Strange. Yeah, that's kind of what this movie likes doing. It likes fucking with you like that. I think they definitely make the conspiracy more apparent. Like, Sele is mentioned as this, like, top company, like, above Nerve early on. And then there's that scene where Misato is asking Kaji for, like, background information. So, you know, there's... stuff like that I think is kind of made more apparent. Like, it definitely feels like there's something happening underneath the surface, which I didn't really feel that too much in the TV series, but maybe because I just wasn't paying attention.
I think it follows more along the lines of what the pilots experience than what the adults experience. Except for a few very major points, which you could chalk that up to being, oh, well, it's about the, like, Gendo and Fuyutsuki up on the moon. But if you think about it, that's, you know, Kaoru's experience. So it really follows the child characters a lot more than, you know.
I think that's how they kind of have to do it. So Aaron, do you have, like, anything? Because honestly, these plot changes are like I said, like, a lot of the changes are mostly cosmetic, and we already mentioned a lot of the detail stuff, you know. But as far as, and we kind of touched upon, like, how basically things are just happening very fast. But do you think there's anything really significant? To, you know, like, these things we listed, like, we already mentioned Asuka's knocked out early, I mean, and that's basically...
Well, how Asuka is knocked out early, that's, like, major.
Yeah, so is there anything, like, notable about it, except for the fact that it's basically just the same as how Toji was knocked out in the TV series, or...?
Just the fact that Toji never becomes a pilot, and Asuka is the one in the test for Unit 3, which worked surprisingly well, because, you know, Shinji likes her... And just the whole, you know, Ava, you know, ripping it apart and then chomping down on the entry plug and, you know, almost killing her. You know, that, like, that's the only thing I could think of that would make him even more enraged than that happening to Toji. And then because of that, you know, she's, you know, gets locked down in this really crazy, like, containment suit. And, you know, naturally, she's not able to pilot when, you know, Zeruel, that really badass angel from Episode 9 attacks. And instead, it's, you know, Mari. And not only does Mari pilot Unit 2, but she unlocks Beast Mode, which is like...
Yeah, what's all that about? Like, is there anything... Have you Ava Geeks talked about that a bit?
Well, it's like the limiters. They're like... There's like rods. Like, they're like, you know, like a nuclear power plant. Those rods pull out and...
Reminds me of Jitalone.
Yeah, well, the human aspects of the, you know, the Ava are made, you know, dormant. And or the beast elements of the Ava are made dormant by those limiters, and just, you know, becomes a pure fighting machine, just like this crazy animal, in order to get more power and, you know, attack the angel with greater strength and force, because you know, that angel in the movie is so much more powerful than it is in the TV series.
The strength of that angel is just, like, overwhelming. Like, the way they just portray it, just, like, awesome. Knocking out, like, just entire, like, you know, expanses of landscape. And, like, just eating, like, the whole, like, all of Rey's Ava.
Yeah, it's like in one bite. One chomp.
Yeah, it's just like, it's, I really love, that's what struck me when I first saw it. I love its sort of like unrelenting, crude, animalistic just power. I think that's something Ava has always been good at, and I think it was driven, you know, to home, driven home like perfectly in that fight.
I agree with everything you said.
It's like, holy shit, did that angel just eat Unit Zero? This is awesome.
Also, one of my favorite parts from that scene was after she runs the bomb into the angel, like the smoke just clears and it's completely undamaged. It's just looming over her. It's just like, yeah, whatever. Come on, come on, let's go. Come on.
Yes. So interestingly, like, you know that like the events of Episode 23 where Rey 2 dies isn't going to happen because Unit Zero was devoured by the angel. And the events of Episode 22 where Asuka was mind raped are probably not going to happen either because, like, Asuka's already, like...
fucked up enough.
Yeah, like...
She was raped in a completely different way, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and the events that are shown in the preview are, like...
crazy.
The only identifiable elements from the preview for the third movie are from Episode 24. And I highly doubt that they're going to go with the same ending as the TV series, obviously.
And even from Episode 24, it's a bit different, because instead of Unit 1 and Unit 2 going down there, it's the Mark Siksu. That's what's
Yeah, because Unit 2 is, like, totally destroyed, or Unit 2 is, like, very heavily destroyed. They're not going to be able to fix it, because Unit 6 is, like, coming down from the moon, and, you know, like, it's going to be AV Unit 1 versus AV Unit 6 going down in a Terminal Dogma, like, in the Episode 24. But then there's also, like, AV Unit 8, which means there's also an AV Unit 7, you know?
That's true! I never thought about that!
So, like, there's a whole bunch of stuff in that, like, Part 3 preview that are just totally unrecognizable.
Actually, so how about before we dig deeper into that, is there anything else we want to say about story changes, or have we come to the conclusion that there's actually not much to talk about the story changes, or what?
I guess in the grand scheme of things, like, they switched around characters a bit, but, I mean, like, the basic plot structure's kind of there, but, like, obviously there's been some changes made.
Like, I hope they manifest in a big way in that third movie. That's kind of...
Yeah, like, it seems like this is kind of, like, set up for the third movie. Mm-hmm. Just sort of like how the first movie was sort of, like, set up for the second movie.
It's layered, man. It's layered. Yeah. All right, so how about we just go on to talk about... We talked a bit about the preview just now, but my favorite part of that preview is fucking Fuyutsuki and Gendo, like, on the fucking mountain. See, the thing is, I didn't even know it was them in the theater, because that scene flashes by so fast, and you can't really tell who those people are, but...
I had to pause it.
Yeah, when you freeze frame it, you tell it's them. So, like, what the fuck? Like, Like, no amount of speculation will be any good, because we just don't know, but, like...
Where did they buy those parkas?
Fuyutsuki has a donkey.
Calls it Yui or something. Yeah, like, you kind of wonder, like, what they're doing there, but, like, obviously there's no kind of context to kind of judge it off of, so we're just kind of... It's just sort of endless speculation at this point.
Yeah, actually, speaking of speculation, there's another hint that this movie does, going back to the plot changes. When they show... Second Impact is depicted in a very different way. It's like this giant rainbow hole in the butt of the Earth. But when it happens, there's, like, these four angels and four lances of Longinus's. So, like, I think that's just another thing worth noting. Like,
yeah, they're, like, called, like... Actually, that's the only place where Adam is mentioned, because in the... the preview for the second movie, there's, like, a text flash that says Adams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, speaking of text flashes, my favorite text flash in that movie is, like, this one thing that says confidential meeting between Mari something and, illustrious and blanked out name.
Who do you think that could be?
Yeah, like, they're doing that on purose just to fuck with you. Like, it's clear, but it's, like, you know, it's like, interesting to, like...
I bet you it's probably going to be Pen Pen.
He just starts talking.
You know, he's going to have some pivotal point in the story this time around, because he was just there for being cute in the TV series, but you know that they're planning something with him.
I hope so. And once again in this movie, I just want to say, there's more stupid hints, and, like, you know, we're completely falling into Anno's dumb trap by me even mentioning this, that, oh my god, it may be a sequel, because Kaoru keeps talking about things are happening again, and the sea is red, and da-da-da-da-da, and...
Yeah, he says, in the second movie, he says, like, I'll make you happy this time, no matter what.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking about it last night when I was watching it again, and it makes you kind of wonder if maybe this might be even be a sequel to the TV series and End of Evangelion, and this is sort of some sort of alternate kind of universe kind of thing going on, and I wouldn't put it past it, Anno, to pull some shit like that.
But then there's,
yeah, there's
again,
there's a definite Groundhog Day feel to it.
Yeah.
But then there's like the fucking like Kaoru calling Gendo his father?
Yeah.
He calls somebody a father. Like, I wonder what that scene was about.
Well, it's either Gendo or Fuyutsuki.
I hope it's Fuyutsuki.
That dude needs some action, right?
Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, there's like all this stuff is speculation at this point, and I'm not really geek enough to really think about stuff, since I just go into it for the spectacle and not much else. But I just think it's kind of interesting to sort of mull over and mention that these things happen and, like, say, oh, it's really interesting that these things are happening. So, I mean, is that it? Do either you, Bonertown, Aaron, have anything to add? Or
The fact that Shinji and Rei are locked in the Eva unit.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely an interesting thing to mention.
I'm thinking there might be some sort of parallel between that and the TV series where Shinji would turn into LCL and gotten mind raped. There might be something similar happening on, but
I'm just waiting to see like what Mari's true role in these movies is, because, you know, like, on some level, like, she knows what's going on more than like other characters do. Kaji has like this quote about, you know, hating to use children as pawns for the use of adults, and then like she turns around and says, I hate using adults
as pawns for children.
Like, she's like, he thinks he's using her do something, you know, to get that key of Nebuchadnezzar to where it needs to go. But she's actually using him, knowing that he's using her in order to get into Japan.
I know that you know.
Exactly.
Basically. And then, you know, she mentions like the smell of other, you know, people and like beast mode, and she's like on this covert thing, and, you know, she knows who Shinji is,
and you know, all this other stupid shit. Yeah, like, there's something definitely going on with her. We probably won't find out until the third movie, or, you know, that's what we thought last time, and it probably won't be until like the fourth movie.
And then the fifth movie? what? The sixth movie? Hold on, whoa, no.
There's also a bunch of cuts, like, in the preview that kind of have this weird sort of, like, instrumentality kind of thing going on. And, like, for some reason, Mari is naked.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, like, yeah. Yeah, there's also, like, aircraft carriers and, like, Kaji, like, pointing a gun at someone and, like, all this stuff. But, yeah, obviously we don't know. And and unfortunately, Masato didn't spoil us in this preview like she loves to do. I think she didn't spoil us in this preview because they don't know what they're writing as of yet. But
they're kind of using these things as like, we'll figure out a way to fit these scenes and these shots and scenes in somehow in the third film, but otherwise, like, I don't know, right?
Maybe, we don't know, but there's no release date yet, so.
I just can't imagine, like, the film series finishing, like, when I'm, like, 30, 31 years old. It just makes me feel old. so sad.
If we don't have anything else to say about the movie, I think we could do, like, a short section at the end here about the fan reaction, because I think definitely people are somewhat I think generally amongst Ava fans, you'll find that they like it. But there's definitely some mixed reactions. So since Aaron is the proprietor of the most famous Ava forum on the internet, what are your people saying about it?
I've heard, like, it's two sides of the same coin, okay? Like, it's kind of like Final Fantasy VII Advent Children, where there's not a whole lot going on, but it's like, it's fan service. Either you love it or you hate it because it's fan service. Like, 2.0 has like a lot of really cool scenes, a lot of really cool action, and a lot of little fan service. I mean, they even show Asuka's nipples. You know, shit like that just drives fans nuts. You know, well, like even like the like when Asuka jumps out of the shower naked and kind of like you know, parodies Shinji doing the same thing. It's also a reference to the Girlfriend of Steel 2 game where like there's like an angel attack and Asuka runs down the balcony and then Shinji sees her and she like kicks him like across the face. Like that's like these are all these like references and it's like fan service. And it's like really over the top in how it's done, and that either rubs you in one of two ways. Now, I really like Ava, and I don't want to see the same thing over again. If I wanted to see the same thing, I would just watch the original TV series.
Yeah.
So I want to see something different. And I don't mind the fact that it's just like really, really fan service-y. And it really just, at least at, not at this point, doesn't have like the same sort of, you know, creative genius that the original TV series had with like psychological introspection and exploration of interpersonal relationships. You know, it's really a lot more like, it's less like Evangelion and more like Divebuster, and
yes,
especially like at the end. So that's either gonna, you're either gonna love that or you're gonna hate it. So like I've seen like some reviews on the internet that basically just tear, I mean, it's Ava 2.0 to shreds, and say like it's a bunch of like really shitty fan service and it's a terrible film. And I agree, it is a terrible film, but it's a great Ava movie. It's a great Ava movie. And if you can get like past the fact that it is not made for like casual film viewers or casual, it's not even really made for anime fans, it's made for Ava fans. And it's, I think it's pretty upfront with that. I don't mind that. So I agree with both sides of the of this discussion as to whether it's a crappy movie or an awesome movie. Because when I think about it, it's like that was like outstanding, but like you feel like really, really conflicted about it. You know, like, you know, you want to, if you like, you wanted to give the movie like some kind of numerical or graded score, like you'd be hard pressed to do it because like it's kind of all over the place.
Well,
in terms of that,
I disagree with you, and I guess this is kind of getting more into our personal opinions of the film, but I think that it is definitely a great movie, and I think it's a great anime movie. I like, but the thing is, it's a popcorn thing. And I think if you accept that it's a popcorn thing, because see, I have no problem with wallowing in trash and junk. I mean, I love it, so whatever. And not to say that this movie is trash and junk. I think there's definitely something a bit more to this movie, but I think a lot of it falls back on just, like, providing this great spectacle, which is half the reason why I watch Ava. Like, I don't care about what it means, honestly. But,
But do you kind of agree with me where I, with how I say that it's a film for Ava fans?
It is definitely a film for, like, that's, I definitely guess a film for Ava fan, especially since a lot of the movie plays off your expectations as an Ava fan. But at the same time, as I said before, I think any person can sit down, provided they saw the first movie, they can sit down, watch this movie, and understand the story.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
And I think they will think it's a good movie. And, but I think as far as fan reaction goes, there are some people in my corner of the internet that, so basically, as far as your corner of the internet goes, people are divided on it. That's basically what you had to say, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so on my corner of the internet, I hang out with a bunch of cynical old people now. And a lot of, there's some of them that like, they think it's a cool movie, and some people really hate the movie. And the reason why they hate the movie is that they liked Evangelion for very specific reasons. They loved the introspective stuff, they loved all the slow moments, and all that stuff is gone. And I love that stuff too, don't get me wrong, but I also love, like, the crazy part of Evangelion, and this movie delivers the crazy stuff in spades. And so I'm fine with that, but there's lots of people who are mad that it's not subtle anymore, that it's just, like, broad strokes all the way through, and, like, it's really heavy-handed, and they really do not like that. And I understand their criticism.
Oh, no, I would agree with them. It doesn't have those elements, and I really like a lot of those elements, in which is why I'm a little bit conflicted about it, because a lot of the things that were in it that I liked the show for originally are not there. But I still enjoy the film, despite that.
The thing is, I'm completely separating them. even though, like, maybe unconsciously, like the Adam thing I mentioned over on, but I think as far as, like, consciously and completely, my experiences are completely, like, this is the TV series. It's its own thing. Well, as far as we know, it's its own thing. For all we know, it could be a prequel to these movies.
Yeah.
But it's its own thing. And these movies are their own thing. And these movies can do whatever the fuck they want. And I'm fine with it. So long as it entertains me. So, and I'm entertained.
It was always going to be a difficult task to sort of continue this franchise and have it meet everybody's expectations, because expectations are fucking all over the place.
You live up to one of the greatest shows.
Exactly, especially with the fan base, like, you know, as large as, you know, as it is for Ava. And so, like, there was always going to be a segment of fans who were never going to be pleased with whatever came out of these movies. And but, you know, Anno, I feel like Anno knows what he's doing. I definitely trust him over fans, because I think all fans are retarded. You know, just give him time. Let the movies finish its story, and then you can judge it for what it is. That's the best way to approach it, because, I mean, like, the story is technically only halfway done.
My sincere hope is it's the same kind of thing as with Die Buster, where, like, if you watch the first two episodes of Die Buster... Mm-hmm. And hated it because it was nothing like the original Gunbuster. But if you stuck with it to the end, it would sync up, and it thought it synced up perfectly. I'm hoping that the new Ava films do the same thing, where there's something just completely brilliant in those last two parts that sync up with the original series and, like, really, really augment and improve those original episodes and the movie.
There's another part of the fan reaction I want to talk to. Lots of people who didn't like Ava at first, now liking it. Because I think Ava, there's three major parts to Ava as far as, like, fan appeal, what people like. There's the Moe element. Ava basically, like, made Moe merchandisable. Like, that's one of the big things it did. And that's probably the big thing the industry took away after it in the end. That's why all anime made in the 2000s is the way it is. And then there's the introspective psychological element, which a lot of, like, the big hardcore fans like. Then there's, like, the mecha action guys who, like, hate all the moe and psychological stuff, but I think they will admit that the fights are pretty sick. So, and I think what this movie caters to is, like, the really stuff that has lots of appeal to normal people, being the moe girls and the action. So that's the stuff they play up. And so the people who thought the series was mopey, bland, and boring because it was very introspective love these movies because they're just, like, balls-to-the-wall crazy. So I think it's just interesting to see how, you know, the lots of people who hated Ava like it now.
And I feel like in these movies, the characters are made a little more likable this time around.
Yeah, it's definitely a bit more less crawling in my skin.
Yeah, less razor blade down the street on your arms,
yes.
Sort of deal.
Yes.
So it's like what Anno said. He said he wanted to make this more approachable to non-fans, and, like, you have to consider them too when you make these movies, because, like, you know, if you stick with just the Ava audience, it's never going to expand.
Well, obviously these movies are doing well. Like, they're, like, some of the best-selling Blu-ray discs in Japan. Like, apparently in the line for the first movie, there was, like, teenagers, like, waiting in line to see this movie, and, like, they were, like little kids when the TV series was out. So, like, how did they see it, you know? So it's, like, obviously you can rent these things easily in Japan, but still, it's, like, these movies definitely have mass appeal, and that's... Mm. And that definitely is reflected in the numbers and the amount of people going to see them, and...
I don't feel like fans sort of appreciate the fact that, like, Anno has to put, like, a mass audience. You know, he has to keep those people in mind. It can't just be, like, an Ava TV series retread, because that's just going to turn some people off.
I know. I think they realize that, but they don't like it. But see, the thing is, when I ask these people, like, one guy asked, like, so, wait, you're complaining about these movies, would you just like them to be exactly the same as TV series? And one guy said that he'd rather not the movies exist at all.
Yeah, I kind of find that kind of silly. It's just fans being uptight about, like, you know, protecting what they see as, like, their love, basically.
Yeah.
Being a little overprotective about the whole thing. And, you know, you gotta let go at some point.
Yeah.
So, I both agree and disagree with that whole idea of wishing, like, something didn't exist because it taints the original. Because, you know, like, I acknowledge, like, the original still is good, you know. But then I'm reminded of things like the live-action Avatar Last Airbender film coming out, mm-hmm. and how much it makes me rage.
Yeah.
Or the fact that Michael Bay is going to be doing live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, as if he hasn't ruined part of my childhood already. So, it's natural. It's only natural.
It's natural, but, like, from my viewpoint is that the original is always going to be fucking right there on the on your shelf.
With, exactly.
You know, if you have the DVDs, or, like, you know, if you're an asshole, on your hard drive.
Although, sadly, it's kind of going out of print now.
Yeah. But, you know, the original is always going to be there. You know, it's not going to be going away anytime soon, if ever. So, like, you know, to wish that these movies didn't exist, it's fucking horseshit.
Yeah.
I hope they die in a fire, or they trip and fall down and get a bullet lost in their spleen. You know, that's just me, though, because, like I said, all fans are retarded.
Okay, so before we close off, I just want to ask, going back a bit, Aaron, so have you noticed this? I mean, I guess you only interact with Ava fans as far as anime fans go these days, but have you noticed people...
That's true.
Have you noticed people who, like, maybe you know someone who hated Ava, maybe they saw this movie and, like, they liked it? Have you noticed that, or what do you think of that sort of phenomenon that's kind of happening? Since you are the Ava monkey, I want the Ava monkey's opinion.
Yeah, I am rapidly more and more becoming less of an anime fan and more of a Evangelion fan or a movie fan, film fan that, you know, happens to include anime in their repertoire of genres of, you know, film that they watch. But I don't really have a whole lot of interaction with, like, the general, like, anime crowd. Like, most of, like, my interactions are at Otakon, and I'm generally too busy working, or when I'm on, like, Ava Geeks, and that's all Ava fans, so I haven't had a whole lot of exposure to
non-Ava.
Like, non-Ava anime fans, but I mean, I've seen, like, large showings of the first film, even in dub, at, like, Otakon, that were very, very well received, and I'm sure that most of them weren't, like, really, really hardcore Ava fans. You know, it was, you know, most likely that a lot of them were, you know, they, you know, may have seen Ava and liked Ava, but, you know, not, like, you know, carried around with them all the time like, you know, some of these Ava fans do. But it wasn't until I saw that reaction that I kind of realized how the first film actually did have some impact on the broader spectrum of fans, because, like, I saw with the Platinum release and the movie, well, going back to the movie release for End of Evangelion and Death and Rebirth, and then going forward to the Platinum release, and then going forward to the Cartoon Network airing, you saw waves of fans entering into the Ava fandom. But I didn't really see that with the first Ava film 1.0, but I saw that a bit more with the second one.
Mm.
And that could also be the fact that 1.0 being released on, you know, 1.11 being released on DVD and Blu-ray being so close to the release of 2.22 on Blu-ray, which is effectively the big, you know, like, release of it, because a lot of people didn't want to watch the camera because it was so crappy. So the domestic release, as well as the fan sub for the second film, were so close together that we're seeing a pretty good wave of new people coming into, you know, at least, you know, Ava Geeks.
Okay, interesting.
So it's good. And, like, as I've said, the TV series and the movies and some of the manga are, you know, they're going out of print just because the state that the companies are in, which is sad, but I'm hoping that these new waves of fans, as well as the success of these, you know, these new films, you know, gets, you know, the TV series and the movies relicensed, because, god damn it, we need a proper anamorphic Region 1 DVD of The End of Evangelion.
Actually, you know, I just, the other day, finally downloaded a DVD rip of the R2 of End of Evangelion, because, like, screw it, I need to get this.
It's beautiful,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Like, I think I mentioned this a while before, but I won the manga contest where they sent me the two free DVDs, and I asked for Death and Rebirth and End of Evangelion, and it was just so terrible that, like, I feel like I wasted those two slots, but then again, there's really nothing from manga's catalog anymore that I want anyway to begin with.
Yeah, I guess Mad Bull is only released on VHS, huh?
Yeah, and like, you know, Dangayo is dubbed only, so...
yeah. I, just to kind of stick for the record, whoever authored the DVDs for those two films really didn't know a damn about DVD authoring.
Yeah.
Because they're non-anamorphic, for one. Like, it's just really... And then, you know, because which ruins it for widescreen TVs because of subtitle placement, as well as just the way in which it uses, you know, the video plane to convey information and store information, you know, so it, you know, you lose a lot of quality in that. And
yeah, I can't watch it on my plasma because of the black bars, they're going to burn into my TV.
Yeah, it's just, it's really, really sad, you know, that the DVDs were, I mean, like, the menus are really cool. Like, whoever they hired to design, like, the menus, those were really, really neat. But, like, the actual...
Except for the fact that if you pick the languages, that doesn't stick, apparently.
Yeah. So.
But the technical mastering of the DVD, like, at, like, the just program level, you know, anamorphic, standard, you know, basic shit like that, you know... It's just inexcusably bad.
Well, I don't want to get too much into minutia before ending, but I heard from a little birdie that the original DVD release of End of Evangelion in Japan was letterboxed too. So I
that was also back in like 97.
Exactly. So. But I think that's the only. I think it was a case of getting bad masters from Japan.
In 2002, people should know some really basic shit about DVD authoring and. Manga Entertainment did not have a very good track record with DVDs anyway. Like, if you go back, if you just, like, look it up on the internet, The Wings of Onimus, Royal Space Force...
Yeah, it's awful. Awful.
...goes down in history as being one of the worst anime DVDs ever made, also by Manga Entertainment. And I would say that Death and Rebirth and Evangelion are a pretty good second or third, you know, in that.
Okay, enough of that.
Enough ranking on Manga Entertainment if, like...
I think we basically covered everything that we could cover. I mean, one thing I want to know about fans once more, I think, that in Japan, I think maybe the reaction is probably a bit larger, because Eva is such a cultural institution, and it's basically part of everyone's life. Like, if you go on a train, like, you see fucking Karu's face, or Rei's face, everywhere. Like, so... I think sort of like the fan reaction there is definitely on a, how do you say, larger scale. I mean, it's obvious because it's Japan, but I think it's worth mentioning because Eva is everywhere in Japan. Like, even if you're like an old, jaded old man, you don't notice like Rei staring at you with her like beautiful red eyes shopping at fucking Lawson. And,
yeah, didn't they have to like shut that store down because too many people showed up to it?
Well, Lawson is a convenience store chain, so, like, everyone goes there, but...
Yeah, but there was a Lawson convenience store that was Evangelion-themed.
Oh, maybe.
It was only open for, like, a couple of days, and then had to be shut down because of overwhelming, like, traffic.
I do not doubt it. So, anyway, let's close off this podcast. I think we basically have communicated what we all feel about this movie, but just to close off... final, complete thoughts, like maybe a sentence or so about what you think about this movie, then we can hit the stop button on this motherfucking 2-hour-long podcast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I'm gonna wait for you guys.
I don't have a whole lot to say, so I'm gonna put Boner Town on the spot, and then I'm gonna rebuttal.
I guess you could say is I like the film. That's it in a nutshell. I like the film.
That's exactly what you said last time. You said I liked it, and then you ended.
It was definitely better than the first film. The third film is completely wide open, the only thing you can do is wait until that movie comes out before you can say anything about it. Yeah, I really don't have anything to
you know,
add.
I honestly hope we're not saying that each time, like, well, we just have to wait for the next movie.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of review a film that has, like, multiple parts to it.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially something as story intense as Eva is. So, like, until those movies come out, you really can't judge them individually.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
I understand what you're saying. I think 2.2 is worth looking at individually, though, considering how much it diverges and, you know...
It's definitely much different than, to the CDV series compared to 1.11, where it's, like, you know, almost an exact replica.
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I like the film. I enjoyed it. That's it in a nutshell for me.
Okay, Mr. Clock.
I'm gonna give a personal anecdote because I got really into Lost. And this is totally relevant because the end of Lost is totally the end of the TV series Evangelion. So
yeah,
bear with me.
Yeah, I kind of know where you're going with
it. Totally
that,
so. Is.
Yeah.
But it actually has nothing to do with that. But I was really, really into Lost. And if you know anything about Lost, it has these crazy cliffhangers almost every single episode. And you have to torture yourself over it. And, like, I got totally demoralized by season 3 because, like, season 2 had this crazy cliffhanger, and then you had to wait, like, 5 months for new episodes, and then they had 6 weeks of new episodes, and then you had to wait another 3 goddamn months for them to get back to making more episodes. And I was so... And then they had, like, sweeps where, like, there was 3 or 4 weeks without a new episode. I absolutely hated waiting. I hated it. I couldn't enjoy the goddamn show, like... I hated season 3 the first time I watched it. I hated it. And not just talking about the first couple episodes. I'm talking about the whole thing. I hated it. But when I watched it again on DVD, I loved it. So I stopped watching Lost after season 3. And I let season 4, 5, and then 6 commence. Didn't watch any of it until like 4 or 5, like maybe 5 or 6 episodes until the series finale. And then I just picked up my 3 DVD sets and then I borrowed season 4 and 5, and I watched the whole thing, start to finish. I caught up the day of the finale, and then I watched the 2-hour recap program, and then I watched a 2.5-hour finale, and then I watched Jimmy Kimmel, Aloha to Lost, and consummated that experience with that show. And it was the greatest thing ever, because there was no waiting. I just binged on it, and I just watched it constantly. None of this, like, year to 2 year wait between cliffhangers. This is going to friggin' torture me to death. Like, I'm going to, like, 3.0 is going to come out, and there's going to be a camera above it. And I'm going to have to prevent myself from watching that for a whole year until they come out with a video release.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wish I had not even watched 2.0. Because then I could have just waited for 2.0 to be done, and 3.0 to be done, and then 4.0 to be done, and then watched all 4 of them together.
And then you'd be 35 years old.
Yeah.
more like 30.
You don't know, 30. But...
Now, I'm going to say that the whole series will be done by, like, 2013. But, like...
I should hope
I'm just like, I'm so excited for the third film, but I'm not going to get to see it for like another year and a half because I'm not going to watch a camera up.
Aaron, I'll buy you a ticket to Japan, man. We'll go.
No, I...
We'll go, man.
You would need to buy me some pretty good goddamn Japanese tutoring, too.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I'll be your translator. I'll be your friend in Japan.
He'll be whispering to you throughout the whole movie.
My God, people are going to hate you in that theater because they're going to be like... Shizukani, and you're going to be like leaning over the whole time. He's like, okay, now he's talking about the Sea of Duroc and his ultimate ego form. But I'm I really enjoyed 2.0, but I'm some ways like really upset that I watched it because now I just want more, and I'm not going to be satisfied by the pace of production. But I really enjoyed the second film. I enjoyed it a lot, but it leaves me torn for a number of different reasons, but still outstanding film for Ava fans.
Let me go back to you mentioned Lost, and Lost is sort of similar to Ava in that like you have all this like
talk teasing
plot machinations running in the background with like the whole like Dharma Initiative and you know what's up with that, and then you also have the characters and it's similar to Ava in that retrospect where, like, you have all this stuff happening in the background with, Nerve and Seeley and, all this shit. And then you have the characters. I just hope these Ava movies don't end like Lost did where it answered the questions about, it answered, like, all your questions about the characters and, like, it ended emotionally, it was emotionally satisfying, but the whole like everything that, like, you know, the Dharma Initiative went kind of unanswered, and there are, like, several plot holes, and, like, I hope that doesn't happen with Ava for me, where, like, you know, like, you don't get where, like, you know, you're emotionally satisfied, but, like, everything else is left kind of hanging. And,
yeah, it doesn't leave you to quote Anno, like, Evangelion is a puzzle. You know, you have to kind of figure it out for yourself.
Right. I feel like Lost was missing a few pieces of that puzzle at the end. And, like, I hope that's not the case with Evangelion, with these movies anyway. And that's all I have to say. So
I want to say one more thing about Lost, and it's more of a factoid than anything else. It's interesting that Lost comes up, because Lost and Ava were both heavily inspired by the same show, which is Patrick McGoohan's The Prisoner, which is like a kind of a cult British kind of mystery suspense drama.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to look up.
There's definitely some parallels between the two shows. So
you know, honestly, I thought you were gonna say Edeon, Aaron. Like,
well, Edeon is there too, but the connection, like the Six Degrees of Kevin Bacon type thing, is that both Lost and Ava were inspired by The Prisoner.
God, Aaron, I was making a joke. Ugh. Anyway.
God, Wild Arms jokes aren't funny.
Faggot. Anyway, we're trying to close this off. We've already been talking for like 80 minutes.
You're such a loser, dude. You like totally pretended like this isn't the third time we've podcasted about these movies when it actually is.
No, I said we talked about it before.
Yeah, but you refer to, like, last time and, you know, the other time, but, you know, there was the really speculative podcast we did back in 2006.
Yeah, with David. That was great.
A billion years ago.
Yeah, when we were brand spanking new. Actually, that is worth mentioning. This is the third in a series of podcasts, the first of which you can't download anymore.
But it's on evamonkey.com/podcast.
Actually, yeah, you can download it. That one isn't too bad, but the first podcast was erased from the face of this earth because it was far too embarrassing for human ears to listen to ever again. This podcast is a little less.
It's archived on evamonkey.com. Both of them are. This one will be too.
Yeah, but I mean, like, this podcast I'm doing is less embarrassing. It's still pretty embarrassing, but it's less embarrassing, so I don't mind getting it online.
When are you going to finish off the horror?
The horror finished. Sheriff Fancy Pants put everyone to sleep. Anyway, we're getting way off track, and I just want to finish my thoughts on this movie. This is all going to be cut out. Okay, so basically, as I said, I think it's a good movie, unlike Aaron. I just think it's just, like, basically, I don't see how, like, a popcorn trash movie can be considered a bad movie when it entertains you. It's entertaining, so it's good, right? So, like, I think it's definitely a good movie that, you know, anyone can sit down and watch if they know what happened before, and I think they will come out satisfied. And I'm satisfied, but I recognize its flaws, and I recognize that it's very silly sometimes, but I like all the silly things in Ava, because I honestly enjoy Magma Diver. So that's basically what I have to say. It's a great movie, and I kind of wish they mixed it up a bit more. I mean, they mixed it up a lot, but I was hoping at this point it'd be a lot more different. I mean, it's pretty different, but I want it to be more different, so if anything, that's my only big problem with it. And apparently, movie 3 has an unlimited budget, so that's going to look really nice, and it looks like it's going to be crazy, so unlike Aaron, I don't get, like, crazy over cliffhangers because I kind of just take it easy and forget about things right after I watch them because I have no attention span. So I can just watch
this movie.
Yeah, you could stay the net. And then I'll just watch the movie, wait a year, hopefully end up in Japan and watch the third one. And hopefully that one doesn't suck, and hopefully it's completely different. I mean, Gendo and Fuyusuke, like, climbing the Alps makes it seem like it'll be completely different, so
With a donkey,
nicknamed Yui.
Yeah.
Here on this podcast. But yeah, that's about all I think about it. So, should I hit the stop button, or do you have something to say, Aaron, or Boner Town?
No, just that we're really sorry about this podcast for being really long and really dumb. And it's all the waste of your time. So, we would like to apologize in advance for that. Or,
real quick, Boner Town. Name an episode of Evangelion that sucks that's better than Magma Diver.
Wasureranenai no, 一人